Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations in art, culture, and ideas. Today, I'm speaking to Clarissa Eiling Lee and about her new book, Art Science, A Curious Education. We're here at Gera Budaya Bookstore in Petaling Jaya. A wonderful setting for this conversation because it's all about books. And this new book, hot off the press, Clarissa, tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into the book, Art Science, which itself is a curious title.
Hi, my name is Clarissa Eiling Lee. I am a senior lecturer actually at the University of Malaya with the Faculty of Creative Arts. Yeah. So the book itself actually is inspired through almost a decade of work that I've actually been doing in art science, even though at the time when I first started doing it, more than a decade ago, actually probably 15 years ago, I didn't actually think of it as art science. I was just not very satisfied with, because I was actually from the science background. And when I was doing sciences, I actually felt dissatisfied by the limitations that I found in, you know, doing experiments as well as like looking at theories and how the theories were developing, because they seem very stiff and not very creative. Of course, as time goes by and as I went and further my studies abroad, and I actually met with scientists who do very interesting and creative work, and I actually found that many of them actually employ like very sort of like what you refer to as almost artistic or quasi-artistic interventions in their work. And it's the same thing, I also met many artists along the way, some of whom actually were scientists or mathematicians who found their calling doing art. So, you know, some of them actually even got a PhD in science before they decided to go to art school and did art that, you know, originally were not so much inspired by their work in the sciences, but along the way they found points of convergence.
Okay, maybe we could start with the way you introduce, you know, this whole concept of art science and the connection between science and art in your book. And it's very curious because the story is about an eclipse and it's about Einstein being in Singapore in 1922, which I'd never heard of, which really excited me. And I was looking for the footnote that would direct me to, you know, that curious visit of his. Tell us, why did you start with that? And, you know, with the building of observation stations in Patani, in Alostar, and in Sumatra, I believe. Tell us about why that was your kind of opening to the book.
I've actually been researching the history of science and technology in Malaysia, actually in the Malay archipelago, so specific focus on Malaya. And there are actually work done on history of like colonial history of science in other regions like South Asia, for instance, from which I modeled the research that I do. And a lot of times the narrative as well as the way science is historically discussed tend to miss out a lot of like, you know, the labor that's actually involved, as well as some of the more interesting stories, like stories that may not necessarily make it into historiography because they are not part of, you know, documented annals, or there's just like mostly oral stories. And there's also very little speculation in most historical writing because historians are a little bit wary of, you know, injecting too much imagination into the story.
I mean, you do speculate a bit about, I mean, you're drawing on the Indian a kind of equivalent, you know, about whether the locals were involved, whether kids might have been, you know, struck by how wondrous all this was. Is there still evidence of that observatory in Alostar? I just want to know.
No, because it was just a makeshift observatory.
All right.
But I was actually inspired to think about the artists. Initially was because in 2019, I went to an exhibition in Singapore and there was actually an artwork done by unnamed locals that was commissioned by a British naturalist. I cannot remember the name of the naturalist, but I thought it was very interesting. But it didn't hit home until I read this passage where in that specific very long article that was published by the Royal Astronomical Society, where because in that report, there were actually many writers, and one of them actually spoke about his station, because there were multiple stations observing the eclipse at the same time around the world. And he was talking about how one of the observers that was in his station were actually using artists, like an army of artists, because they have cameras and they have other imaging technology, but you know, because they have to be prepared for everything, so they also have human artists to basically, they were drawing according to instructions that were provided by, you know, the head, who is also an observer. You can consider him maybe at the time as equivalent to like a gentleman scientist.
Right, and so you talk a lot about this as scientists who are not professionals, amateurs, you know, who get involved. I'm just thinking, when coming back to your interest in this region,
yeah,
and you know, and it's insertion into global, you know, science histories. I'm thinking of Alfred Wallace and the Malay Archipelago, and you know, natural selection as a theory.
Yep.
What else would come to mind when you think about this part of the world in science? Where were the connects there?
The connection is actually fairly huge, and I could only tackle the beginnings of it actually through this little book. In fact, I'm actually doing a lot more research. For instance, when I think about history of physics, because that was actually my original research from almost 6 years ago, is I'm not trying to think about history of physics as in how physics came to Malaya, like from any other part of the world, or from Europe, Britain, or the more developed parts of Asia, but rather also like, is there probably a conversation of physics that does not use the same language of physics that we associate with modern institutionalization of physics as a discipline and a field? And then to kind of like start the story from there. And that's actually why I got attracted to writing about the Wayang Kulit, because the Wayang Kulit itself, a lot of times we think of it in aesthetical, ritual, cultural practice, but we don't actually think about it's the science behind it. Even if, because the science is never written down, it's like wisdom that's handed down from generation to generation. I mean, there's a lot of science of optics involved, you know, in deciding the placement of the puppets, the placement of the gunungan, the placement even of the tabe that's actually used in the performance.
Right, and that's the subject of chapter 6, is it, of your book. Okay, we'll get to the chapters later, but I think we want to nail down this idea of art science.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my cursory kind of research that I did, I see art science as a kind of hyphenated, you know, compound word, whereas you've made it a single word. And I wonder if you could help us define what art science is and why you chose not to use the hyphen.
The art science actually as a non-hyphenated term has actually been used as well by other people, but it's probably a more recent practice. And the reason is because we are thinking of art science not as art and science combined, you know, to produce something that is a bit of art, a bit of science, but rather art science as a standalone practice. It may have drawn this original inspiration from certain materials that you always associate with, you know, scientific practice and materials you associate with art practice, but when they come together, they're not supposed to be recognizable as either. In fact, they present a new form of conversation, also a new theoretical framework, and also even a new way of practice that's very different from just art hyphen science.
So, you know, I wanted to tackle this perception that's quite common, that the sciences are involved in something hard, and so we actually have the expression the hard sciences, and then we have the social sciences, which seems you know, really far away from the hardness of things, things that you might not be able to quantify necessarily, though I think with sociologists quantification was a big thing for a certain period. And art is certainly way across that spectrum, right? It's seen as a very, very different type of endeavor. Where do they kind of overlap? I mean, the art and the science, in terms of the way you might think about the work of each of these different types of labor.
I think to think of these, you also have to think of the practitioners who are the practitioners today. And to label a particular practitioner as an artist or a scientist is probably a lot more clear cut, because you know they do have certain defined practice, and it's actually a lot more it's harder to become like a professional scientist because you have to go through like years of training and institutional recognition. Whereas artists, there are many who are actually self-taught and self-trained as well. But the thing is that a lot of work especially work that falls under this umbrella, which I'm also involved with. It's called like, speculative design, speculative art. And there's actually not long ago, there was actually a book that came out looking at what speculation actually means. You know, thinking about science fiction, not just as textual material, but also science fiction as embodiment and as how you practice knowledge. Right.
Right. And actually, in a recent show that I did with the artist Tan Zi Hao and his work, you know, What's Left for Gathering, he does have three works that are he calls speculative. It's got a speculative biology, as it were, because it's got to do with the particular animals and how they might evolve depending on the debris that's available within the oceans. And I thought that was very interesting, the idea that science too needs to imagine the future, as it were.
Yeah, there are many, actually the idea of speculative plus science or speculative science actually pre-existed the idea of even modern science, because science as an idea only came about in the 19th century. But there was this work by Schelling, who is a German philosopher, who is called speculative physics, but it's not the physics that we think of today. But it's very interesting that he talks about physics as relationality, right, between an object and the producer. So we ask, like, what is this object and what exactly is this producer? And I think art science actually tries to go back to that specific genealogy. You know, in a way, it bypasses the disciplinarity and the disciplining that took place by the late 19th century, going back into the past. And in a way, it also opens up room for reconsideration of objects, like even like what Zi Hao was doing, right? You are defamiliarizing what you should associate with, what could be done with that object.
Yeah, what's interesting about, I mean, the fact your location institutionally in the Faculty of Creative Arts at University of Malaya is this other, you know, and it's already a long-standing practice of trying to bring different disciplines together. And I think of MIT's Media Lab, where, you know, you have somebody who might have been trained as a in the medical sciences, but then moved into architecture. And the purpose there is to actually bring people from different disciplines, see them as equal and equally contribute to your conversation
equal
about innovation, right? Okay, we'll take a short break now, and we'll be back with more on the book, Art Science, A Curious Education by Clarissa Lee. Stay tuned.